story entitled Crazy Horse and the Berlin Murders. It is about the Native American chief Crazy Horse, and it is about some deaths in Berlin. It's also largely about the London Underground system. There's some unfamiliar words in here that relate to Crazy Horse, which I use. He belonged to the Sioux Nation, that's spelled S-I-O-U-X, and that becomes clear in the story, Plains Indians, who called themselves Lakota. And his local group was the Ogallala Sioux. His real name, which I also use, is Tashunka Witko. The train is five London Transport units of space away, Victoria Line. I'm close, really close, to the front of the platform. If, when you wait for the train, instead of standing behind the yellow line as instructed, you put one foot out onto the white edge, with the toe of your shoe overlapping by a fraction, if you then lean your body back, hold your nerve, and don't move when the train comes in, all the carriages will go over your foot, leaving it untouched. It was a dare I learned that even my daring older sister Gina wouldn't do with me. So if you stand there staring down the train as it comes in, the driver gets a shock and the operatives watching on the remote cameras get a fright. Perhaps the other travellers experience a pleasurable surge of adrenaline, either from the possibility of it happening or from the relief of it not happening. I must decide whether to take the game one step further. To aid my decision, I have the two postcards I use as bookmarks. One I've had for ages, a picture of the Native American chief Crazy Horse riding into battle. The other, a painting of suicides I bought a week ago. I like to look at them as much as possible, first one and then the other. The picture, actually a drawing of Crazy Horse of the Ogallala Sioux, shows him riding a paint pony into battle, holding a rifle and raising his arm in defiance. He wears a single feather in his plaited hair and war paint on his skin, yellow with large round black spots for magical protection. He looks as if he might be a human cheetah, supernaturally swift. Crazy Horse was also a medicine man who saw visions. He knew what was coming. When I was young, I used to say Syax for the name of the Sioux tribe because that's the way it's spelled, and Gina would laugh at me. I don't know how she knew any better, she didn't. Crazy Horse was my childhood hero. He called his own people Lakota, knew himself as Tashunka Witko, never allowed himself to be photographed. The drawing, made after his death by a Lakota artist, preserves him racing into combat, forever uncompromised. I bought the other card from Tate Modern. I was working there in publications. I'm at Tate Britain this week. It's a painting by George Gross called The Suicide. Decadence drips from this picture of Berlin during the Great War. There are two dead bodies depicted, one hanged, one shot. The other, live figures, are dead by implication. Already they are decayed. Everything is crimson red in the German Expressionist painting. The rain falls, a fox and a vixen haunt the streets, licking the shot man's blood as it drains away on the road. The dog fox barks, the vixen screams. Sometimes I put both pictures in the same page of my book and stare at them, deciding. Crazy Horse died in 1877. He didn't die the hero's death he deserved, but was caught in a web of ignominious circumstance. He was wounded by a nobody and died slowly, killed by some lowlife who thought he had the power, the authority to make himself a someone. The real somebodies who surrounded Tashunka Witko knew better than to molest him. The nobody saw only a dirty redskin. Life and death lie in the hands of the ignorant. That's the way of things. Crazy Horse deserved better. I will not think about Gina. But now I have, and I've ruined the day because I promised myself I wouldn't. Leftwards, where the train comes from, I can see two women talking, looking my way. Their mouths are going up and down like in a silent film. I know they're talking about me and what I did to make it happen, to make Gina die. All your fault, they're saying. In the painting, the dead man sprawls near the gun he used to shoot himself in the head, and the moon is reflected in puddles reddened with his blood. The man in the moon has a leering face, a smirk, an expression of, I knew it would come to this. I let her die. They tell me that's simply not the case, but I don't believe them. Now the train is four units away. Between Turnpike Lane and Manor House, or between Caledonian Road and King's Cross on the Piccadilly line, the gap between stations is long, 2 minutes ride instead of one. These sections are the best for what Gina and I used to call the challenge. We used to take bets on who could last longest without holding on when the train raced along those stretches, riding the train. We began young and perfected our skills over the years. Even when, as adults, we'd travel into town together every morning, Gina worked in Holborn and I went to art school in Charing Cross Road, if we couldn't find seats in the rush hour, one of us would say, challenge? Gina could still do it better than me, even in her stilettos. 5 months now since she went. I try to be strong and make every effort to really concentrate on not thinking about what I am really thinking about, but to focus on my absorbing work project, or my engrossing book, or on fascinating office gossip, or riveting newspaper stories. Otherwise, if my mind drifts down here in the underground, every time a Piccadilly line train runs fast for longer than a minute, I look up and I see her there, balancing, riding every lurch and roll of the carriage, perfectly poised. And it's always me getting thrown sideways, infuriating fellow passengers, she triumphant, laughing at me. The Victoria line runs faster, pitching and jolting. Now that I use Pimlico Station, I suppose that bucking bronco of a ride between Highbury and Islington and King's Cross stations ought to remind me of the challenge. But it doesn't. We didn't often go that way together. The Victoria feels uninhabited, no memories. Which means so far, I've been safe on the Victoria, not picturing Gina, because it's not our line, ours is the Piccadilly. Was the Piccadilly. Having difficulties with people down here though. All the passengers seem weird, what's going on? Like yesterday, I saw this girl with hair as black as coal, with a wave face drained of life, her clothes were nothing but rags, she sat huddled into herself. I wondered if she'd survived the journey, she was already a spectre. And I saw a boy who stared like a zombie, his face all dead skin, and a man with a rictus grin of yellow teeth, a skull face like the painted suicide. And when I turned away, there was that woman with her two red lipstick and her two orange hair, a perfect parting showing white roots, seeking youth, finding decay. The train jerked all their dead bodies into life with a galvanic force. Couldn't read my book because it all seemed to be about what I did to Gina. I stared at the others around me, their vacant faces, their potato faces, their vacant eyes. Who are all these people with their putrid smells? Am I the only one who catches it? The fetid reek of alcohol, cigarettes, animals, halitosis, sweat, opulent perfumes doused over the stench of decay. I saw them all turn into their own ghosts. Am I like them? Perhaps tonight will be okay because it's mostly the Victoria. With a bit of luck, it'll be Bounds Green before I realise how far the train has travelled. Unless I decide. How often have I stood on the platform and watched the train surge towards me and felt perfectly and ridiculously safe from its dangerous force because I was an amazing total of 18 inches away from it. Such a small margin of difference. Three units away. Each day at work I go through the whole process of seeing how long I can keep up the pretense of being all right about it before Gina takes over. As if something was eating me up from the inside, something living, crouching, inhabiting my veins and arteries and nerves, a vixen licking my blood. Because at the start, Gina did say she wasn't feeling quite right, and I told her she was the healthiest person I knew with all the water she drank and all the poisons, as she called them, which she avoided drinking, and all the running that she did, her willowy body something I always envied but could never achieve. "We just aren't built the same," she told me. "You'll never look like me." And I said, smugly, "But at least I've got tiny feet, unlike your giant size sevens." And she said, "All the better for running and for balancing," reminding me how she always managed to win the challenge. So it seemed to me that she needn't worry. She was probably only stressed and tired from work. I should have told her to go and see a doctor, because she must have been asking me, whether she ought to worry, whether anything might be wrong. She was relying on me to make the decision, but I didn't. I couldn't. I'm no visionary. Crazy Horse knew the future. He couldn't stop it happening, but at least he fought back. I teased her about how good she looked in her new suit. "You could be a model," I told her. "I'm so lumpy," I complained, and she told me not to behave like a sulky child, which was a bit unfair. I didn't take any notice when she told me how small a size she'd bought. It just hung so well on her. Today, I had stomachache, indigestion, nausea. I told myself it's all the cake and chocolate I had to eat, that I always have indigestion because I always eat too much of the wrong food. Swallow a Pepcid for your stupid guts. Take no notice. Yesterday, the pains were bad. Bad. They're kind to me in the office, patient. They let me lie down in the medical room alone. Jenny, my friend from education, brought me a cup of tea, held my hand. "It's panic," she told me. "It's only been a few months. Naturally, you're still feeling it." She's comforting, Jenny, perceptive. But she's not a doctor. How would she know what's only panic indigestion and what's the disease? The same malevolent thing which consumed Gina secretly, transforming her inwardly, keeping her sweet-faced unmarked almost to the end. By the time the inside showed on the outside, her eyes turning the wild and red like the Berlin decadents, it was too late. She never suspected. How was I supposed to know? I told her she'd eaten too fast because she was always in a hurry, packed so much into a day, told her she was dyspeptic. So that's what she believed. It should have been me, if anyone, that the thing took. Gina was so vivid, so able. She had plans. No glass ceiling could stop her. And her family, her two poor children, and Alan, how are they to go on? All of it's my fault, and I can't help. I'm no substitute. I'm just a collapsing liability, and they need someone strong, a hero who could charge in on a horse, waving a defiant fist, and rescue them. They don't need a moping decadent like me, with no family, no life. What's a nobody got to offer? One unit, almost here. At first, I was numbed with shock. I didn't even realize it was my fault. Gradually, the truth revealed itself. I killed her as surely as if I'd thrown her under the train myself. "It's a disease without symptoms," the doctor told us at the last. "It's nobody's fault. None of you could have known. Gina had no reason to suspect. It hits apparently healthy people. There was no way of preventing it." We stood and stared. Her shocked and angry family. We said nothing while they intoned their practiced homily. A particularly malignant case. It was always too late. It's a tragedy. But we did know, Gina and I. We knew. She asked. I did nothing. The truth is, I didn't want to believe anything was wrong. How could she leave me? I didn't listen. I took no action because I am a coward. Stand clear, train approaching. I'm listening hard for that moment of transition from background tube hum to the noise of the train in the distance, but it remains beyond my hearing. I can sense a change in the pressure in my ear, now feel the breeze on my cheek. Now the air bursts out of the tunnel, lifting skirts, deranging hair. Now I hear the train roaring, crackling with electricity, sparking with its thousands of destructive volts. And now I see the lights hit the tunnel wall and roof and shine on the tracks. And now the thunder of its arrival drowns out my brain. So now I'll see if I dare put my foot beyond the white line and keep it out, and if I dare go any further. The train squeals to a stop. Doors open. In the red painting of wartime despair, a man scuttles off, bent-backed, fleeing the scene. Perhaps the dead men didn't commit suicide. Perhaps this is their murderer. Thank you.